Yeah. All right. Hi, everybody. Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. And, of course, on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. It is our normal visit. Every couple of weeks, we talk to Dan Feinberg, and we like to talk about TV. And we've got some texts from you, the listener, 312-981-7200, that we're going to get to as well. And we're going to talk all things TV. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print. That's F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we always have fun talking about television with Dan, and we welcome Dan to the show. Hey, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right. Welcome back to the show.
Always good.
All right. Let's start with what you thought. What are you thinking so far of Game of Thrones? It seems to be the show of the moment. And what have you thought of the first couple of episodes?
It is definitely the show that people are buzzing about most. I think people should be buzzing the most about The Americans, but that's another discussion or another topic because The Americans is hitting on all cylinders, and I'm not sure that Game of Thrones is. But on the other hand, even hitting on most of the cylinders, Game of Thrones is fun. I mean, the first week had the excitement of the premiere. The second week had the excitement of, spoiler alert, the thing everyone knew was coming with Jon Snow.
Right.
And then the third week maybe didn't have as much of that excitement. It was maybe just actually an episode of television, and I found it satisfying as that. I'm sort of waiting maybe for the momentum to be building a little bit. It's still a lot of people sitting in dark rooms this season. There were like 5 or 6 scenes of that in this past episode. And, you know, it's not that there's anything wrong with people sitting around tables talking about politics and policy, because that is part of what the show is about. But, you know, maybe I just yearn for some dragons.
Well, I'm not. That's a show that is lost on me. Game of Thrones. I've tried many times and I just can't do it. I just can't get into it.
Tell me about the tries. How far have you made into it, and what's stopping you?
I've watched just season one.
Okay.
And I couldn't follow half of what was happening. I just didn't care. I started watching season two, and it got to the point where it was like, all right, there's just like. There's a lot of boobs and a lot of people getting killed and there's some dragons, but this is just not my thing. And I just couldn't follow who was with what and what, you know, and I just didn't care about anything that was happening. And I just didn't care about the characters. So I just kind of gave up on it.
Those are perfectly valid reasons to want to drop out. And this season has introduced a number of flashbacks. And so one of the characters who vanished in the previous season or vanished for all of last season came back, and he's been used as a device to introduce a lot of the flashbacks that fans of the books have been missing. And that's meant there's been a whole new assortment of people who have been popping up in scenes. And even I've been going, wait, am I supposed to know who that person is? Oh, wait, that's a young version of the person who Sean Bean was playing in the first season.
Oh,
or
I see.
Something. So that added chaos, added confusion, though the guy they got to play young Sean Bean looks rather ridiculously like Sean Bean.
Yeah.
So
okay. Okay. Now, do you read the books?
I've read all of the books, and George R. R. Martin just released a excerpt from the eternally upcoming 6th book in the series, and I didn't bother to read that yet. I figure someday that 6th book will eventually come out, maybe. But yes, I read the 5 books. I read the first 4 fairly quickly, and the 5th book, I was a bit like you with the TV series. I started it and put it down at least 3 or 4 different times.
Mm.
I found the 5th book kind of genuinely awful, and I mean, I will still read the 6th book, but a certain amount of my joy seeped out of me reading the 5th book.
Okay. Does the series, I mean, obviously it's got to be faithful. It does follow the books, correct?
It followed the books fairly explicitly for the first couple seasons, and then it's been deviating bit by bit by bit, and by the 4th season, it was already, I would say, maybe 75% from the books and 25% made up, and maybe last season was maybe closer to 50-50. And this season, no one knows, because while some of the stuff is still coming from the past books, it's now moved ahead in a number of different directions. And so no one knows if it's moved ahead in directions that George R. R. Martin told the writers and, you know, whispered secrets in their ears and said, here's where you have to go, or if some of these characters are just off completely on their own. And in some cases, clearly they are. So it's hard to know necessarily how close it is to the books at this point. And that's actually causing some fun because people who read the books knew a large percentage of what was coming for the first handful of seasons. And now there's actually some surprises.
Oh, okay. All right. And now what are you thinking of Veep this season?
Oh, it's been fantastic. Veep and Silicon Valley have both been absolutely tremendous. Are you all caught up on those?
No, I'm behind on Veep, but I'm for some reason I'm caught up on Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley's been tremendous.
Yeah.
I can see why you'd want to watch that first.
Yeah, it's great. It's great, and and Stephen Tobolowsky on Silicon Valley, he's the man.
It's so nice when Stephen Tobolowsky is always the man.
Yes,
so of course that's established.
Yes,
but it's great when a show is smart enough to know the people who fit into the world and the people who they can just plunk into the world and go, okay, this person is going to fit in absolutely perfectly, and bang, you plunk him into this world and he's fantastic. And it's one of the most, I would say, layered characters he's had in a number of years, because he obviously is a guy who just pops up in an episode or two of things, whatever. Everyone goes, oh, look, it's Ned Ryerson. Yay. which is always great,
yeah.
Always happy, but he doesn't often get these multi-episode arcs, these chances to build a character, and it's great to see him getting to do that.
I agree, and I mean, well, he's a real good friend of the show. He's been on many, many times here. He's a good friend of the show, and I had the wonderful experience in February earlier this year of hosting a screening of Groundhog Day, and then afterwards he Skyped with us on the big screen, the audience asked him all kinds of questions, and as usual, the guy, the guy is unbelievable. One of the funniest and best storytellers of all time, and it's always great, and I'm so happy that he's got a part like this. And you're right, Dan, this is a part for him to really, he really gets to shine in it, and it's great work. And all the way around, I mean, Silicon Valley is actually, it's just great. And is it appreciated? I mean, because I always feel that Mike Judge's stuff is never appreciated. Then if it does get appreciated, it's appreciated 10 years later.
I feel like it's, for example, it's more immediately being appreciated than, I guess, probably Office Space and certainly Idiocracy, et cetera.
Yeah.
I think it's being appreciated. It does fairly well in the ratings by, again, HBO standards and sort of strange whatever the heck that actually means. It's gotten Emmy nominations. It's gotten a fair amount of respect, I would say. It's a show in its third season, and it had shorter first and second seasons, so people are still kind of getting into it. But I think without any question, it's one of the best comedies on TV at this moment. And then you pair it with Veep, and Veep has been terrific. There were some concerns that with Armando Iannucci, who created the series, leaving after last season, leaving in a totally pleasant and amiable way, not acrimonious, but
right,
leaving, that it was going to lose its voice, and it hasn't at all.
The voice, at least,
is totally intact.
I totally agree with you, and that was a big concern of mine. Was him leaving, and the writers that they still have on staff and the people that are involved, obviously, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus and everybody creatively involved in it, understand what the show is and what it's about and what it should be, and they're doing it right. It's really funny, really, really.
And that's another show where they only pretty much bring in actors who fit in perfectly into that world, and it's so great the number of people who get to shine. And so, yeah, you put those two shows together and then you throw in Last Week Tonight, and that's about as funny a 90 minutes of TV as I can imagine.
Yeah. All right. So HBO doing well, right, as usual.
Doing well in their certain ways.
Yeah.
They still need a drama that isn't Game of Thrones, but at least right now everything is hitting on all cylinders.
Now, what about the – you reviewed the TV movie, of HBO's movie All the Way, which is about LBJ, and it stars Bryan Cranston. I have not watched it. It is on my list to watch. How did you feel about it? You did say that Cranston was very good.
He is. It premieres next, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, I believe. So it's coming. It was a little bit of a sort of long lead because I did it for Hollywood Reporter for the magazine.
Mm.
Cranston won a Tony for it, so it's coming with all of that attendant hype. The movie itself, I think, is only okay. I think the first half is terrific and compelling. The second half becomes really kind of loose. It picks up in the immediate aftermath of JFK's assassination as LBJ is becoming president, and it follows his first year in office. So the Civil Rights Act, the election against Goldwater, and a number of civil rights and other milestones. And the first half is almost entirely how LBJ pushed through the Civil Rights Act. And it actually has a good through line. And there are some great scenes with Cranston and with Frank Langella, who plays a rival senator, or I guess he was a Democrat, but, you know, a senator not in favor of civil rights. And that's really good. The second half is sort of unwieldy and covers too much ground and not enough well. A lot of prosthetic makeup, sometimes kind of distracting in the "ooh, that's impressive" prosthetic makeup kind of way. But a lot of prosthetic makeup to make Cranston look enough like LBJ. But there are many aspects of it that are worth watching, most of them involving Cranston.
I find it very interesting that Jay Roach has become the go-to political movie director for HBO.
It's strange thing that he's carved out this, and it's sort of his side career, because he still does the bigger things. And, you know, he did Trumbo, which nobody liked, but did get an Oscar nomination for Bryan Cranston.
Right.
So, you know, he got to make and everyone basically called it a bad HBO movie. That was what, like, a dozen of the reviews I glanced at said.
Yeah.
So everyone wants to put Jay Roach in his corner regardless. This one, it's a different sort of thing from Recount and the Sarah Palin one. Those kind of felt like they were kind of on the edge of pseudo-comic. They weren't quite all the way funny, but they had satirical political satire elements to them.
Right.
This is more straightforward. So LBJ is kind of a big, larger-than-life kind of funny figure. So Steven Spielberg executive produced. There are a couple bigger aspects to this, but yeah, it's funny that Austin Powers is Jay Roach.
Yeah.
This is what his career is now, and it's a successful, mildly successful career.
Yeah, so, it is. Very interesting. Interesting. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay, man?
Of course.
Dan Feinberg is with us, and he is our TV guy. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We have some texts from you, the listener, that we are going to get to. If you've got a text, and we're going to read it to Dan. We've got more stuff to talk about in the world of TV. We're going to break right now for the news, and we'll come back after the news with more on 720 WGN. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday coming up. Triple Play Thursday. So get your triple plays ready to go. An artist, three songs. You pick them. Dan plays them, coming out of commercials, coming out of bumps. And so it's Triple Play Thursday. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Also our text. And you can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow. The best way to stay connected. Dan Feinberg is our guest right now. We're talking TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
All right, let's talk a little bit. I'm not through with the second season yet of The Unbreakable. Why am I blanking on her name? Kimmy Schmidt.
Kimmy Schmidt.
Obviously, how could I blank on her?
I'm not through the second season either yet. So we can sort of be clueless how it ends together.
I got to say, I really like the show. And I think she's great. And I think the whole cast is really good. It's fun to see Carol Kane, do some fun stuff on the show. It is in that Tina Fey, Carlock wheelhouse. It is essentially, you know, the same kind of show almost precisely as 30 Rock. That's the way I feel about it, at least.
Its targets are different, but the sensibility is definitely in line.
Yeah. Now, how do you feel about that show?
I think that it's a very funny show that I haven't finished because there's just too much other stuff on TV, and it continues to be my problem with Netflix shows in general, is that I watch the pile of episodes that they give me before so I can review them, and then that tends to be only part of the season, and then I can't watch the rest of the season because I've got to watch the next Netflix shows. So that was what the good thing was about The Ranch, is that they sent out all 10 episodes, and thus I watched all 10 episodes, whereas I think I've seen half of this Kimmy Schmidt season. And I thought that the particularly of interest was the basically the Internet Says Awful Things episode. How did you feel about that episode?
I thought it was great. I did. I thought it was great. What was of particular interest, the reason why?
I thought it was interesting just because of all of the pseudo-controversy. I wouldn't go so far as to say genuine controversy the show faced in its first season about Jan Krakowski's character being Native American and a few things of that nature. Mm-hmm. The representation of the Asian boyfriend character, there were a number of things that, quote-unquote, the Internet got worked up about. And it was kind of funny to see Tina Fey working through those demons. And it was a pretty direct addressing of the reaction that the show had gotten. Yeah. And it was funny to see simultaneously kind of a certain bitterness from Tina Fey about it, obviously, but also so good humor.
Yeah. Well, I always think that that's when Tina Fey is at her best. Like when she would write stuff for SNL. Because it was so immediate, you know, she was writing things that were happening at the time when she was doing Update and stuff. And her best stuff for me was the stuff where she was pissed off. That to me was always when I liked Tina Fey the most, is that when something happened in the world that really pissed her off or really angered her or you know, she felt very strongly about. That was always, I thought, the strongest and funniest stuff that she did for the show.
I think I agree with that. I think maybe the difference here in why I was sort of going back and forth on that entire episode was because I think Tina Fey is at her best when she punches up, when she takes the big targets, you know, the corporate interests, on 30 Rock and the Alec Baldwin character and all of that. And this, more than usual for her, felt like it was punching down. Like it really was, at least at the start of the episode, being like, stop making fun of me, little people on the Internet. I felt like the episode changed current as it went along. But I was very interested by the progression that she was going through on that episode. You could almost kind of see her thinking out loud, which I find fascinating. I like to watch people think through things.
Right. Now, speaking of Netflix, there is a show on Netflix that I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but it was made here locally in Chicago and actually stars people that I know, and it's called The Jams. Have you seen it?
I haven't. And whenever I hear about a show that I'm not sure I knew existed, it messes with my head. So tell me about it, please.
Okay, I would not have known about it had it not been for my partner here in traffic, Esmeralda Leon. She sent me a thing. The show is about these two guys who do a late night radio show in Chicago. It's about how the morning guy, played by David Pesquezi, is going to give up the morning show, and they're trying to get the morning show. And it's cast almost entirely by Chicagoans, with Chicagoans. The guys who created it are from a couple of theater companies here in Chicago. It's extremely low budget, and oddly, there's only four episodes.
I think I know what this is now. Okay, go on.
And they're only half hour episodes, so you can watch this thing, you know, in an hour, basically, a couple hours, you're done. It's five episodes total. So I watched it simply out of curiosity because I knew some of the actors. So Michael Patrick Thornton, who is a good friend of the show, terrific actor here in Chicago, he's in it. And like I mentioned, Dave Pesquez, he's in it, and Kathy Najimy is sort of the big name. Everybody else is local, the creators, the writers, the directors, and the people who play the supporting roles. And the guys who are the two leads, they're here. They're from Chicago. I have mixed feelings about it. There are things in it that I like. Overall, I find it like really deeply flawed. Some of it just isn't funny. It's fun to watch people that I know on screen. I think Michael Patrick Thornton is great. And in fact, I think he's the best thing in the show. But there are certain things that I found very strange. And I'll mention this very quickly. Dan, and I don't know what the legality here is, but there's an episode where they mention Blackhawks, and they say Chicago Blackhawks player Patrick Shane. And they mention Patrick Shane a bunch of times. It's a plot device in the show. They call him, at one point, they call him Shaner. And I was just so completely taken out of that. Like, could they not get the rights to say Patrick Kane? I haven't, you know, talked to the guys who created, because I know the guys, and I could, like, call them and say, what the hell was that all about? But is there some sort of rule there? And they used somebody's voice playing Patrick Shane. Maybe that had something to do with it. I don't know.
I think in certain cases you just don't want to put your neck out there. Now, as you were describing this, it actually came to me. I haven't watched it in its final form. Every year I do jury work for the New York Independent Television Festival, and I watch shorts for them. And this the Jams originated as a series of shorts, which is why it's the format that it is. And I judged it back in, looks like 2014, according to my notes.
Okay.
So I am vaguely aware of this. There's just a lot of water under the bridge since I was aware of it.
Right. And it was just strange. I mean, I had no idea it was on, and it wasn't even in my feed. You know how it's like, hey, you might like this. It wasn't even in the feed. It was in Esmeralda's feed, our traffic woman. It was in her feed, and that's how I found out about it. And she watched it simply because she's on a late night radio show in Chicago. You know what I mean? And as far as like details about, you know, the radio element of it, it's completely wrong. Like, they got the details completely wrong. But yeah, I mean, that's interesting. So it started out as so you got to see just the short the shorts of it back in 2014.
Yeah, and you know, it felt like that was, and so basically every one of them was sort of a little short building joke for 4 minutes. You know, it was an online short, and what it was. And I think I chuckled at a couple of them and didn't chuckle at a couple of them. I definitely, as I'm looking at my notes from that year, it was in the middle of the ones that I watched. It was neither the best nor the worst thing I watched that year for that jury duty. So that's always the fun of judging things, is when some of them actually appear in the world.
Yeah.
Previously, the most significant thing that I had judged on those juries was Animals, which had aired on HBO recently, animated series, which was pretty decent as well. So, but most of the things, they never appear. But how funny to see the Jams made it onto air somewhere.
It's there. It's it's on Netflix, man. And so I don't know. I mean,
that was not an enthusiastic enough review that you gave it for me to need to take that out.
No, I mean, obviously, Dan, I ended up watching. I don't know if I would have been as enthusiastic watching all of the episodes, you know, because I binge watched it, if I didn't know a lot of the people involved and was just curious about it. It's not great by any stretch of the imagination. Like I said, certain things are good because you've got like some really great actors in there, Dave Pesquese and Michael Patrick Thornton. I don't know, but a lot of it seemed kind of half-baked and not all the way thought through. And Kathy Najimy is in it, but I think she has an executive producer credit on it. I'm not sure what she did, you know, creatively. She shows up and, you know, throws out some punchlines here and there, and that's pretty much all she does on it. I would not go out of my way to watch it, Dan. If you get around to it, you get around to it. But there, if you know, locally, we had an interest in it because it's Chicago and because it's about late night radio. So of course, I had to watch it.
Makes sense, and you know, there's only so many Dick Wolf Chicago shows that you can get excited about. Except that the answer is 15 or 16. So
yeah, what shows? You know, we can talk about this a little bit later about shows that are being renewed. They did renew the Chicago shows, right? Not all of them, but they did review like.
Oh no, they're all the ones that are current are coming back. The only question, and it's not really a question, is whether the Chicago Legal, I don't remember exactly, Chicago Law.
Chicago Law, right? Chicago Justice. It's Chicago Justice.
If you'd given me a chance to get a few more synonyms out, I was going to get to that, I swear. it premiered as a backdoor pilot the other night. They showed what the show was based, you know, there's good proof of concept. And, I assume it's probably about a 100% chance that it'll make it to the air. And plus, Dick Wolf has at least one nonfiction thing that he's doing for NBC, though I don't think that's in Chicago. And then he's doing the Menendez Brothers miniseries. He is just a busy man.
He's doing a Menendez brother. Is it like a mini series like OJ?
Yeah, it's yet another one of the. There are going to be so many attempts to ape OJ that are going to be coming out in the next couple of years, and none of them are going to understand why People versus OJ was good. It's going to be depressing. So get ready to be depressed by all of the true crime fiction that's going to get brought up from the 90s and the aughts.
Yeah.
To bore you.
I guess that was inevitable. I mean, when something is as successful as The People versus O.J. Simpson was, I guess it was inevitable that, that these things were going to happen. It's kind of depressing, though.
Oh, but it is both of those two things. You know, I cannot tell Hollywood, I am not in a position to tell Hollywood not to chase after the tail of whatever the previous hit was. That's what they're going to do anyway. Just the idea that it's going to be as simple as pick a random crime that interested people for 2 weeks in 1993 and make it into a 10-part miniseries. It's not that simple.
Yeah.
O.J. was unique in 50 different ways, and other producers are going to find out all of those ways when they attempt to.
Yeah. That's exactly what's going to happen. All right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're going to get to some of your questions via texts here, and we got more TV to talk about. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And my guest is Dan Feinberg. Dan joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right, we got some texts from some listeners who have questions for you. Linda sends a text that says, in a Hollywood Reporter podcast, Louis C.K. said he wasn't sure he had any more stories for Louis, the FX show, and it might be ending. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that he shouldn't force it. And it's in the same way that Larry David shouldn't force more Curb Your Enthusiasm stories. And I know for a fact that that door is always going to be open for him at FX whenever he wants to go through it. So when he's got stories, he should bring them up, and FX will let him do whatever he wants, and that's fine. And in the interim, it doesn't appear to me as if he's having any difficulties finding outlets or finding ways to make his voice heard. And that, to me, is the most important thing, is if Louis C.K. feels like he has ways to tell the stories and make the jokes he wants to make, then he should do his thing. That's what I think,
Yeah. Okay. And I mean, has anybody really gone and asked, you know, if he lost so much money on his latest project?
I haven't made it through. This is my colleague, Scott Feinberg, whose name is spelled differently, F-E-I-N, at The Hollywood Reporter. And he was always a hilarious confusion.
Yeah.
I get lots of congratulations on his stuff. So that's always good. Apparently, I mean, he didn't lose everything. Let's just put it that way. There's a distinction that probably has to be made between losing everything and not making money off this thing. And I think that's probably the reality of the situation with Boris and Pete, is that he wanted to break even or make money off of it, and apparently he hasn't done that. Right. And that's simultaneously too bad, but also just what comes from being a trailblazer. You know, he went off on his own, and he did something unproven without a net, and it was audacious and ballsy, and probably the next person along, if it's him or someone else, is going to benefit from whatever went right and whatever went wrong on this. And that's just what comes from being first through the door sometimes.
Yeah. You know, there's a very funny, I watched online the other night, he appeared on Conan and told this really hilarious story about how he originally wanted Joe Pesci for the part that Alan Alda played. On the show. I don't know if you saw that. Did you see that?
I didn't see it. I've heard that part of the story before. Apparently he also went to Jack Nicholson, I think. I think Jack Nicholson was on the original list. he was aiming high, or he was aiming high or possibly reclusive.
Right. Right, exactly. But the story that he tells about Joe Pesci is hysterical, because Pesci had no idea who he was. And so, like, Pesci's assistant gave him some stuff to watch, and Pesci called him back and said, "Yeah, listen, first of all, I watched some of your stand up, and that's something you shouldn't pursue, man. You're just you're not good at that, so you should just stop that right now." and he refused to do the show, but then, like, allowed, because you know, Louis C.K. was like, well, let me just pitch it to you. Let me give you the pitch. And I guess he went over to his house. He pitched it to him. And he still insisted, basically, that Louis C.K. should never do stand-up ever again. And he said, he goes, I like the scripts. You got some good ideas there. I'm not going to do it, but you got some good ideas there. But just don't do stand-up anymore.
Well, probably just as well, because Alan Alda is just terrific on Horace and Pete, and I hope that he gets an Emmy nomination for it. I hope that Emmy nomination allows a few more people to find out that this show exists, and you can download it on Louis C.K.'s website. And yeah, I think it's a worthy experiment. I don't necessarily know how much I loved it when people with lots of money who could get lots of money from richer people to make TV shows ask audiences for money in quite this way. I mean, he could have had this subsidized by Netflix, FX, anyone else. He decided he wanted $31 per person for it, and I'm not sure if that's the right business model for consumers, mostly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like people who try things, and you can never say that Louis C.K. rests on his laurels or that he is creatively complacent, so good on him, and I want people who experiment to be rewarded, I guess.
Okay. All right. You know, it's interesting. During that conversation, you mentioned Curb Your Enthusiasm, and we talked the last time you were on, we talked about Dice on Showtime, and then I was telling you about Hoff the Record, which is Hasselhoff, and it's the same kind of thing. And since I believe, I don't know if I talked to you about my obsession, because I got Showtime. Okay, and I didn't have Showtime before. I got it, and I'll tell you very quickly why. My ex-wife, we are still in contact with each other. Every once in a while, we text each other and stuff. And she incessantly texted me that I needed and must watch Penny Dreadful, like went nuts and would not, because she knows my taste in horror and all this stuff. And she's like, I can't understand why you're not watching this show. It's unbelievable. You have to see this show. And so I finally broke down and I got Showtime. And she was right. I think Penny Dreadful is awesome. And I absolutely love it. It's the best thing John Logan has ever had his name on, as far as I'm concerned. And I love everything about it. I binge-watched the first two seasons, and I'm one episode behind on the latest season. Now, what do you think of Penny Dreadful?
I am a bit further behind. I'm about two-thirds of the way through the second season, and the world just was too full of TV.
Yeah.
I just think that Ava Green is so fantastic on it that nothing else matters. You know, she is, that is as gung-ho, crazy, committed a performance as exists.
Yep.
And she's gotten so little recognition for it. I think she got a Golden Globe nomination for it this past year, but no Emmy nomination thus far.
It's crazy. She's unbelievable on it. I personally think everybody on it is great. I don't know. Where the hell did acting come from with Josh Hartnett? How did that happen?
I am less convinced on Josh Hartnett. I'm less convinced on the guy who plays Dorian Gray. Mm-hmm. There are a few of the supporting performances that I'm not 100% sold on, but I'm 110% sold on Ava Green. She's just so good, and eventually I'll catch up with it. Because in addition to her being so good, it also is a show that looks spectacular.
Oh, it's beautiful.
That's such a great visual style established by Juan Antonio Bayona in the first couple episodes, but carried on by other people subsequently. So, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm on board. And the guy who plays Frankenstein's monster, I think, is also really, really amazing on it. So I'm grateful to my ex-wife for insisting. Dan, hang on, okay?
Of course.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We got a break here for the news, and we come back after the news. We'll talk a little bit more with Dan about television, and you can follow him at thefineprint.com, and it's thefineprint on Twitter and Facebook. It's F-I-E-N. All right, we'll come back, talk more TV after this. Morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. How are you? Triple Play Thursday, Get your Triple Play Thursday requests in. Pick an artist, three songs, and those triple plays will happen a little bit later on in the show. You will program the music bumps heard from coming back from commercials and breaks and stuff like that. So Triple Play Thursday coming up. We are going to pay tribute to George Carlin in a little bit. Today would have been George Carlin's 79th birthday. So, he's one of the greatest stand-ups, one of the greatest voices, one of the greatest minds ever. And we're going to pay tribute to George Carlin on his birthday. And that'll be coming up as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200. And my guest right now is Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter. We talk TV. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much.
All right. So Sharon has sent a text. And it says, can you ask Dan about some of my favorite shows? And they would be Orphan Black and The Americans. What do you think of the newest seasons of both of these shows? Well, we've already talked a little bit about how great The Americans is. And what do you how you feel about Orphan Black?
Orphan Black has moved into the I'm only watching it because I like Tatiana Maslany and I don't care about anything that's happening. Column, unfortunately. Sort of with each passing season, I care less about the grand mythology of the show, and it's not that Tatiana Maslany ever becomes unentertaining to watch, which is the remarkable thing about her performance, but I couldn't tell you what's happened in the first four episodes of this season. I can tell you that I think it's been slightly better than last season, but so little that I can't even differentiate anymore. I watch, I enjoy the performance, and that's fine. Now, The Americans, on the other hand, is at this moment the best show on TV. Everything changes, comes and goes. You know, it'll be gone in a few weeks, and then it'll be something else. But at this moment, The Americans is doing tremendous stuff, and this season has been so nicely streamlined. Are you caught up on it these days?
I'm not caught up. I'm behind on The Americans. Don't give anything away. Are the same people writing? Do they have the same writers and the same directors working on this season?
It's the same core team, and they're doing tremendous work. This season has been, I think they've done a nice job of clearing up some of the clutter in the narrative this season, which doesn't mean that necessarily it's become less complicated or less rich. It's just very, very easy and direct, and it has a lot of momentum. And the show has always had a fair amount of momentum. There's always a lot of stakes to the show, but this season, it's been emotional and effective, and the past few episodes have been particularly good. I am really loving The Americans.
Yeah, okay. 773 area code sends in a text that says, can you explain what the heck is going on with Castle?
No, I cannot. Well, I can tell you sort of the industry scuttlebutt and silliness about, whether or not the stars loved each other or didn't love each other or whatever, and whether that has anything to do with why one of the stars is leaving at the end of the season. Stana Katic will not be back next season. And at this point, frankly, my feelings on Castle are that it's a show that really should be kind of put out of its misery. It's a show that I always found entertaining, sort of an entertaining souffle, and I haven't found it at all entertaining this season. It's been a total mess, and I don't know how much of that has to do with the behind-the-scenes stuff that is causing the stuff that's coming. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, at this point I'm watching it out of, it's not even obligation anymore. It's just I'm going along with it because it's on my DVR, and I don't need to pay a lot of attention to it, but one point I really enjoyed it, and all of the cases this season have felt almost exactly the same, and it's just there isn't the same charm, and when a show loses its creativity, loses its charm, it's really, at this point, Castle's had a good life. It should be allowed to move on, and instead it will continue for another season, and I don't know what purpose there is to a sort of lifeless zombie Castle, but I'm sure there's someone out there. Nathan Fillion fans will still watch it anyway.
Yeah, okay. I see that you tweeted about Houdini and Doyle on Fox, I have to say we have a Sherlock Holmes expert that joins us periodically here on the show, and he enjoyed it. I have not watched it yet, but I really thought the tweet that you that you put out there, which was, honestly, I was rooting for Houdini and Doyle, but Fox marketing never got the audiences past that's a real show phase.
It's too bad. It's too bad on a personal level. My cousin was one of the creators of the show, so I got a little bit of personal investment, and I'm not going to tell you it's a good show. Unfortunately, it's a show where the sort of loopy concept is fun, and then it's one of the many, many Fox shows at this point where they take really interesting characters and then have them just basically solving crimes. And it's the same thing, you know, why was Lucifer working with the LAPD? Well, that's what made it into a show. It's what Fox does, and it's what Fox does with kind of annoying frequency, and Houdini and Doyle both fits perfectly with Fox's MO, but unfortunately, well, it just, I mean, no one watched it, so, you know, there's nothing about fitting in there that works. You take two fascinating characters, and then you want them to be doing something more interesting than just solving crimes, and that's all they're doing, unfortunately. I think it's an interesting world, but this just isn't the show, I guess, unfortunately.
Okay.
But
Donna in Chicago sends in a text that says, what's going on with Vampire Diaries? Is it canceled? Also, is Rain canceled?
The CW doesn't cancel anything at this point, with the possible exception of Beauty and the Beast, which will return in a couple weeks because it's kind of unkillable, but this will be its last season. Rain has been renewed for another season, despite the fact that its ratings are minuscule. Vampire Diaries has been renewed for another season. There was a point, I think, in March where the CW renewed everything it had on the air.
Yeah, we talked about that one time when you were on, yeah.
It was, you know, it's part of how they build loyalty or whatever. And in some cases, that's nice because I think Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is a show that wouldn't be renewed under any other circumstances. It's a ridiculously low rated, but it gets another season, a creative show.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jane the Virgin, ridiculously low rated, but it's a really good show. So give these things their time. Vampire Diaries fans have been sort of back and forth on the show anyway, and it got moved to Fridays this year, and the ratings are down and all of that. One of the stars gave some interview, I think, where he indicated that he thought next season was going to be the last season, but then he backtracked. But if you look at the ratings, probably they dictate that next season should be the last season anyway. But it will be back, and I am way behind on Vampire Diaries.
Okay.
I'm like 15 episodes behind.
Oh, so, man.
you know, it's piled up on the DVR, and then maybe there'll be a period in the summer where there's nothing on, and I'll just plow through some episodes.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right. All right. Well, the Good Wife has ended, and how do you feel about the Good Wife, and you know what kind of legacy it's going to leave behind, and in general, what do you think about the Good Wife?
I think legacy wise, you look at the fact that since that show premiered, it got two outstanding drama series Emmy nominations. And during the same period of time, Lost got one and Friday Night Lights got one. And otherwise, no network show has been nominated for Outstanding Drama Series. It's a field that's dominated by cable, premium cable, and the streaming services. Mm. And I think what the legacy of Good Wife is that we may not see another show. Well, we will eventually, but we may not see soon another show that's a 22-episode-a-year network show that achieves that level of kind of prestige, acclaim, and kind of awards attention. And that makes it an interesting aberration, an interesting anomaly, and I think that's fascinating. I never thought that Good Wife was one of the best shows on TV, but I still thought it was a good show, sometimes a very good show. I wrote a Hollywood Reporter column where I isolated, I think, 11 episodes in its fifth season when it was actually a great show. You know, I can pinpoint those episodes. But, you know, it's a show that had the ability to achieve greatness and to show what you can do if you're doing something on a network process, on the 22 episodes, on the writer's room, on the, you know, just the rigorous schedule that network dramas have, which is a absurd churn, the amount of stuff that they turn out. If you consider the number of Netflix shows and HBO shows that do now only sometimes 12 episodes or 11 or 10, it feels like it's shrinking. And the British shows that do 6 episodes or sometimes even 4, and they call that a season. The fact that Good Wife did 22 for all of these years and sometimes was able to be as good as it was, that's an achievement in itself. Mm.
How many seasons was the Good Wife on?
I think this was the seventh season that just ended, and that ended the run of the show. So it had a very good run. It had a period in its fifth season, I think, where it was really telling good stories well, otherwise, it went back and forth between sometimes telling really good stories really well and sometimes doing episodes that you knew they were basically just doing because they were being asked to do 22. Mm-hmm. And that's just the kind of thing that happens on network shows. And it's a tough business to do well. And the network shows that do things on a level of excellence while doing full seasons, you know, whether you think Scandal is awesome, it's a little erratic, but whatever, you know, House when it was at its best. Those are shows that are doing something that has a high degree of difficulty, but only a very few shows can do it. So,
now, what are some of the things that I want to give you a chance here to tell people? Besides, you mentioned how great The Americans is and how strong it is, best thing on TV right now. You said, what else should people be watching?
Let's see, what is coming up that is good? If you haven't gotten enough of the Comedian Plays Themselves shows, Maria Bamford. Do you know Maria Bamford?
Oh, yeah, she's great.
Okay, lots of people will recognize her from basically being on a lot of alt comedy things and on the fourth season of Arrested Development. She has a new Netflix show in which she plays a sort of veiled version of herself navigating through Hollywood and meets famous friends and all of that. Lady Dynamite, it premieres on Netflix on, I think, the 20th, and it's a far better than average version of this.
Oh, good.
Genre.
Good, good. I love her. I didn't know that was coming up. I'm so yeah.
It is. So that's on the 20th, and it's pretty darn good at times. It's really got a lot of inspiration. It was co-created by Mitch Hurwitz from Arrested Development, so it has some of that, and that's good. I'm trying to think of other things that are coming before we next are likely to chat. I don't know if we're going to talk before Preacher premieres on AMC, but it's pretty original and fresh, and some people are going to really love it. Some people are going to get probably turned off immediately. And then there's the Fox dating reality show, Coupling. No, couple. Oh, darn it, I stepped on my own joke. My own stupid joke about a Mark Burnett dating show on Fox that is going to exist. It looks a lot like if you, for example, yearn for those Fox days of Paradise Hotel, Forever Eden, and Temptation Island, it looks like it's a callback to that. I don't know if you look back on those.
Yeah, no, that's not in my wheelhouse at all, Dan.
I haven't watched it anyway, so I don't want to put my recommendation on it, but I'm sure it's fantastic. Just totally.
All right, totally. Great. And people can read you at The Hollywood Reporter and follow you on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. Dan, always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you in a few weeks, okay?
Sounds good, Nick.
Take care, buddy. There you go. There's Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter talking TV, answering your questions as well. Good guy, and it's always fun to have Dan on.